Oh, beloved Kripal Guru, my love with you is very ancient. This is the Bhajan Tumase Meri Prita Purani on page 267. I am lying at your door. I am standing with my hands stretched out. The eyes are thirsty. Make me have your darshan. Shower grace, O Lord. Take me across. O friend of the miserable ones, the ocean of compassion, how do you forget me? Showering grace, you liberated the saints. O Satguru, you have liberated even the sinners. You ate the contaminated fruits of Shivri. You embraced all those who came into your refuge. You have erased everyone's difficulties. You have known everyone's pains. O Satguru, I am in your refuge. You are an ocean and I am your drop. You are my mother and father and brother. I am a beggar. You are the giver. O Ajay, this is the tale of lives. This is the story of birth after birth. O beloved Kripal Guru, my love with you is very ancient. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 267.
Tumase Meri Prita Purani Kira Pala Guru Pyare Pyare Kira Pala Guru Tumase 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 Meri Prita Purani
Santa Jana Tare.
Kripal Guru, my love with you is very ancient. I want to begin today reading the letter of Baba Sawan Singh. This is letter number 106 from Spiritual Gems. Baba Sawan Singh says, I am glad to receive your loving letter and congratulate you on having such a clear and penetrating reasoning faculty. Here are a few observations on your problem. Every deep thinking person tries to form a mental picture of the universe with a view to solve its mystery and reconstruct the picture, giving it a new color or touch when he has gained more experience and receive more light. The mind and the intellect being blind, their range is extremely limited. With these tools, the riddle remains unsolved. As a matter of fact, nobody sitting in the pinda part of the body has any clear understanding of the problem. He gropes in darkness. Santmat gives us the word as the key to the solution of the problem. With every little rise within, there is a new experience and rapid change in the viewpoint. In Anda, one begins to see some light, and after crossing Brahmanda, all the coverings on the soul are removed. The soul is naked, free, and is capable of knowing its origin in Satchkhand. Reaching there, it experiences that He is infinite, He is the light and life in all. All is He, or all is from Him, and that Almighty God, the Word, and the soul are of the same essence, that the Almighty God is the ocean of consciousness and bliss. The Word, God in action or creator, is a wave of the ocean, and that the soul is a drop thereof. Only He is infinite, and all that has been created is finite. In this sense, the soul, the mind, matter, and the various forms of creation are finite and work in their respective finite spheres. The activities of the mind are limited to the three planes, physical, astral, and causal. It has no place above Trikuti. Soul alone goes up to Satchkhand, working independent of the mind. In the three planes mentioned above, the soul works through mind and matter, the mind becoming the active agent. In Brahmanda, the soul takes on a covering of the finest phase of mind and matter. In Anda, it takes on another covering of comparatively coarser form. And in Pinda, it takes on the third covering in addition. With each covering, the light of the soul is dimmed, and in proportion, it is cut off from the Word. The same applies to the mind. Mind, having been activated by soul, works in the three planes and progressively goes dull with its descent from the top of Trikuti down to the physical plane. Both the soul and the mind, when confined in the coverings, forget their origins. The soul its Satchkhand and the mind its Trikuti. One has the option to look at the mind as one mind working in three planes, or that there are three minds or three aspects or phases of the same mind. It makes no difference. In its dullest state in the physical plane, the mind is synonymous with imagination. Santmat does not give the mind any divinity or infinity. As the moon is bright due to the light of the sun, so the mind is bright due to the light of the soul, the brightness depending on the amount of light received. The inherent nature of mind is materialistic, outward, and negative. When it faces inwardly, it gets illumination from the soul, and when it faces outwardly, it is associated with matter. Your reasoning is good. Quote, man must be eternally perfect. Unquote. The Creator is within him, and so is his complete creation. When man has explored himself and seen the creation and the Creator within himself, he is eternally perfect. But so long as his investigation is incomplete, he is imperfect. Man alone, out of the whole creation, has the privilege of, quote, using his faculties as he sees fit, unquote, and of going within, right up to the feet of his Creator in such kind. Dream is real when one is dreaming. Only when he awakens or comes into the other state, conscious, and compares the two states, he calls the conscious the real and the dream the unreal or an illusion. When the attention leaves the physical plane, enters the astral, and compares the two, only then the physical world becomes unreal and the astral the real. The finite mind which is working on the physical plane, on entering the astral, casts off one covering and merges into the finer phase of the mind, loses its separate existence, and becomes a subtle mind. It has knowledge of the two planes and can function on these two. When it has entered the causal plane by casting off the astral covering, its range extends to the third plane and it is higher but still mind. The universe of those who call the mind universal or infinite extends to the causal plane and often only to the astral. They have not penetrated further. Their infinity is finite in the experience and terminology of the saints. Their God is the mind of Saint Man. It is incumbent on man to seek his origin because he is thinking person. He is expected to supervise his planning department, go inside, and go ahead to get his reward. I wish you to go within and see the reality with your own eye and to your satisfaction, and compare it with what your reason has pictured. The substance lies within you. And I want today to read actually a section from the book that I am currently working on very slowly and sporadically. The book is called, as I have said before, Stumbling Toward God. And it is an account of my experiences with both Masters Kripal Singh and Ajay Singh, although I've gotten nowhere near the end of the time with Kripal. The chapter I want to read today is from Book 3, which is called 10 Days Wonder, and is a day-by-day account of the 10 days in Washington, D.C. in January 1964, at the end of the 63 tour. And this was an absolutely remarkable period of time, which had an enormous effect on my understanding of the path and on my ability to love the Master, because he was, throughout this period, incredibly lovable as well as loving and powerful. And he gave so much. On this day, for example, he gave two pretty complete talks, which, if I have time, I will read both of them, along with my own comments leading into and coming out of the talks. So this is Monday, January 20th, 1964. Master arrived in Washington from Panama 2 days earlier, on Saturday, January 18th. He gave a very informal talk on arrival, and then on Sunday, January 19th, he gave two complete talks, one at the Friends Meeting House in the afternoon and one at Mr. Khanna's house in the evening. And then on Monday morning, we began with meditation sitting, which is where this particular chapter starts. All right, Monday, January 20th, 1964. This morning we had a meditation sitting with the Master, which was heavenly. Afterwards, a gentleman who had had a significant connection with one of the Radhaswami groups at Agra asked the Master some questions relating to the ways in which his lineage was connected with that lineage. They were already talking when the tape recorder started, which may have been my fault since I did a lot of the taping during those 10 days. I taped about half the time, and some of the talks I have very clear memory of having either taped or not taped, but others I'm not sure whether I was running the tape recorder or not. Doris Yokelson and I took turns using her tape recorder to record, and as I explained later, mine to do copying afterwards. For the most part, that changed somewhat. But the gentleman was very happy to be with the master. The tape picks up with him asking, "You can get his darshan that way?" To which the master replied, "Aye, by receptivity. He's ever with him, I tell you, ever since he's initiated. He never leaves him. But we have no time to turn to him, truly speaking. He's waiting for you within." Once in the early beginning after I met my master, I put a question to him. "Well, what is a man to do who is cut off from outside and furthermore has not reached the radiant form?" That was within a few days after my initiation, the very first 2, 3, or 4 days. He said, "All right, we always think of our friends and of others, of this and that thing. Then why not think of the God-man?" After a few days, I further questioned him. "What should be done further?" He said, "There's no need now of visualizing or remembering anybody. If you enter the room, you'll find him there. Do you see? When a man is initiated, that master power, God power, or guru power resides with him from that very day. If you simply enter within, you'll find him. Before entering a room, you might think of the man sitting inside or not, but if you enter it, you'll find him. Is it not so? It's a very definite thing, but people don't believe it because they are not properly guided. People even don't believe there's light inside, honestly speaking. So that is why I say, this is a religion above all religions. Religions are formed of rituals, dogmas, prayers, this and that thing. That's all right. They are the preparation of the ground. Make the best use of them. But this is the true religion, and that is within each man. Any man can delve it out. A Christian may have it, may delve it out, just so a Mohammedan or anybody who knows how to go within. Some help is required in the beginning. Without help, nobody can go within. When one gets some experience to start with, why should he not progress? Maharishi Shivrat Lal was a direct follower of Rai Saligram, initiated by him. Rai Saligram, of course, was a very important guru in the Radhaswami Agra lineage, a direct disciple of Swamiji Maharaj, brother disciple of Baba Jamal Singh. Maharishi Shivrat Lal was a direct follower of Rai Saligram, initiated by him. He's a very literary man. He wrote, I think, more than 4,000 or 5,000 books on Radhaswami Math. And I have put a footnote here, and this may seem incredible, but see Steve Morrow's introduction to Shivrat Lal, Light on Ananda Yoga, in which Steve, who had some knowledge on this, makes the same point that he wrote. Many of them are very short books, no doubt, but he wrote nonstop, basically. He used to say, within 6 months you can go up. But that is not simply by the instructions given by mouth. That is by receptivity while living in close relationship with your master. If you go to your master and live for him alone and nobody else and be receptive, you'll progress rapidly. The gentleman said, well, Saligram himself must have been pretty well developed if it didn't take him long. The master replied, yes. Those who come in contact with them, they get development, you see, after all. They're fortunate. Babuji Maharaj, who was another guru in the line of Agra, was with his mother at the feet of Rai Saligram. There are four who were noted disciples of Swamiji. One was Rai Saligram and one was Baba Garib Das. They have their own lines. And one was Baba Jamal Singh, and there was one more. So these four carried on. Baba Jamal Singh was sent to the Punjab. Go on, carry on this thing there. Rai Saligram and Mata Man Devi, also known as Radhaji, the widow of Swamiji Maharaj, who was also named by him as a successor, followers of Swamiji Maharaj, directed him, along with Saligram, to carry on there. So Baba Jamal Singh was sent to the Punjab. Thither he had to go to carry on there. Baba Jamal Singh kept it pure as a science. He did not mix it up with rites and rituals. Of course, that is necessary for the commencement. But when rites and rituals come up, people are sometimes deluded. They consider perhaps that's the only thing. Do you see? So he kept it pure and simple as a science. That was carried on by Baba Sawan Singh. He instructed us to have a common ground for all so that no error may creep in. Times have changed, you see. Truth is the same. As I told you, I had a long talk with Agampa Sahib, the great-grandson of Rai Saligram. He is an awakened man. We are after truth, you see, that's all. People asked Aristotle, do you love Plato? He said, yes, I love Plato. And what else? I love truth more than Plato. I love truth more than Plato, Master repeated. So we are lovers of the truth, which is given out by those human poles. We have greater love for them for the sake of truth, is it not so? Blessed is he who comes across such a person at whose pole that power is working. And any man can be selected for that. It is his grace, not man's selection, you see. In all religions, there's some reference to this thing, but there are longer ways to achieving it. These have been cut down to meet with the times. Both Kabir and Guru Nanak were such poles. They were contemporaries for 48 years. Under them, that truth went on. We are not fit for those old methods, you see. They are longer ways, time-consuming and hazardous. In the natural way, even children see light. That is why when small children come up, they have light, because the slate of a child's mind is clean. Its attention is not so diffused as ours. We have too many irons in the fire, you see? So the only success lies in the fact of continued devotion, surrender with one-pointed attention. You may have in days, you may have in months, what you might not have in a lifetime. And blessed is the one who rises that way, whether he is in one school or the other. Any man living in any religion can delve it out. It is within him, is it not? At this point, a lady came in and said, Master, our daughter and youngest grandson came here and I'd like to have you meet them. Our daughter and my youngest grandson. And the master greeted them so lovingly. He said, all right, most welcome. Hello, 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 come on. What's your name? What's your name? What's your name? And with some coaxing, the little boy told him his name was Matthew. And then someone asked, can we have meditation tomorrow morning? To which the master replied, you can come if you like, and added, so long as I'm here, you can make the best use of me, that's all I can say. But along with that, even if you sit in meditation here, put in time also during the day, in the evening, at night. Do you see? Simply sitting here alone will give you something, but we should continue it during the day, at night. Give it more time and you'll have wonderful progress. Here it is only just to point out any errors, to give you a little impetus, like that. You have to put in more time, the more you can, of course. When I went to my master, I was a government servant. I was a family man. I asked him how much time I should put in for meditation. He said 5 to 6 hours daily minimum, and the maximum that you can. Perhaps I was the greatest of all sinners, that's all I can say. The more you put in of this time, the better, because we have the ramifications of mind from births past, even in this life. Time factor is necessary. When I was in the Himalayas, I put in 16 hours a day. 16 hours a day. But we must develop more and more, you see, not by compulsion, but by sweetness. Reverend Emil Christensen, a Pentecostal minister who was Kripal's first American initiate, asked, "Do you see then that length of time? All the time you see something, 16 hours of duration? Do you see all the time, or do you just meditate?" The master said, "No, meditate and leave the body." Mr. Christensen said, "Oh, I was wondering myself, because I sit sometimes long and I see nothing, and then I sit a very short time and I see something." The master said, "No, no, that's it. When you learn to leave the body and traverse in the beyond, you're always conscious." The question was asked of Prophet Muhammad, "Do you sleep?" He said, "My body sleeps, I don't sleep." That is a developed state, of course. Every man can go up there. There's nothing strange about it. Regularity pays. Regularity and sincerity. Not by imposition. Slowly. When a man gets some bliss inside, he would like to be there all the time, you see. We are disturbed by outside elements, that's all. At this point, Mr. Khanna commented, "Some people have been writing many letters to the master on his tour. So that cuts away his rest, you know. He had to cut down his tour to reply to them. So I think that's not fair." And the master hastily replied, "No, no, oh no. I would request of you all one thing. That you remain in touch with me, that's right, quarterly, by sending in your diaries, you see. The number of initiates is increasing day by day. And in spite of all the instructions, I reply to a letter. It's received, and within a fortnight, another letter comes in. If there's anything urgent, you're welcome to write, you see. Anything urgent, life and death, you're welcome to write any time. But regularly, as a matter of course, that should not be sooner than every 3 months, so that time may be given, you see, to everybody. Be regular. Practice is required. When you understand it, follow it, go on with it. But keep the diary daily. Don't postpone it till after 3 months. You may send it in every 3 months. If anything very important, very urgent arises, you can send that directly. That is because the number is increasing, you see. At first, I advise sending in the diary monthly. Then after 2 months, then after some time, I asked, all right, send it in quarterly. That's easier for everybody. If there's anything urgent, you're most welcome, you see. Develop and see. When I was in service, I was a superintendent of a section. There were other superintendents too. One superintendent was a member of the Arya Samaj, which was and is a Hindu sect founded in the 19th century by Swami Dayananda, that went back to the Vedas, including the Upanishads, and rejected all developments within Hinduism subsequent to the Vedas. So kind of, they have a reputation kind of a fundamentalist sect. There's more to it than that, but that's very definitely a part of it. He came and told me, "You are working in the office with no hurry, no waste, calm and quiet. Everything goes on in your section, and you're never perturbed. The work that's turned out in your section is almost double the others. What is it? What do you do? What can I do to concentrate?" Then I told him what to do. That was long ago, before I met the master. I told him something. After a month or so, he came back. "Well," I said, "at my house, the water tap goes on. I hear the sound." "Well, put in more attention." Then after 2 months, he came back again. "Now, in the beginning, I hear the sound of the tap water going on, then I forget it." "Still, go on further." "A man should be practical, you see. Worldly things come in. Nobody can say that all of his life is smooth. Life is a series of interruptions." Life is a series of interruptions. And Master did repeat it just like that, with great emphasis the second time around. "Sometimes good, sometimes bad. They come up as a result of the reactions of the past. You have got something to give strength to your soul. They do come up. If you're regular in your meditations, they will not have a pinching effect. Do you see? Sometimes the severity is minimized, cut down to, by devotion to the Master and by devotion to the contacts within. So whenever any man gets sick, that power is within you, seeing, watching, helping, you see, without asking for it. Then it will pass off. Sometimes a man is in very good circumstances, sometimes not in very good circumstances. And these are passing phases. They come and go. Do your best and leave the rest to God." Master threw this off almost in passing, you might say. And to me, the thoughts that he expresses here, summed up in that phrase, "life is a series of interruptions," are about as basic an understanding of what happens on the path as you can have. You know, it connects with that other saying that is very famous that he wrote me in a letter: "Please know it for certain that everything that comes to your account is in your best spiritual interests." Because life, by definition, he is saying here, is a series of interruptions. And in order to rise above the circumstances of life as we have it, we have to work with those interruptions. That is the stuff of the path. Everything that is given to us is there for us to make use of. We can, by using them, rise above them. And there's no other way. You know, and this is borne out thousands of times in connection with the way the Masters work. I remember, I've told this story many times, when I was in India in 1969, one day Master put us in meditation in the guest house at Sawan Ashram, which he did every morning. He put us in meditation. He just told us to sit, gave us the instructions as usual, and left, which was his habit. Came back usually in an hour or so. And a few minutes after he left, a crew came into the room next to the one we were sitting in with power drills, jackhammers, and began taking up the concrete floor that was in the room next to ours. You know, what on earth are we to make of that? And when Master came back an hour later, or whenever he came back, you know, he asked us what our experiences were and so forth, just as he always did. You know, it's like we think in order for us to meditate, everything has to be just perfect. You know, there can't be any disturbance, anything. If there is, we get upset. I don't say we all do. I don't. Sometimes most of us have, I think, most of the time. I often have, anyway. But that's not Master's way at all. You know, okay, so there's dripping going on in the faucet. You know, you don't worry about it. You make use of it and you rise above it. And many people remember that at the Unity of Man conference, Master used to put people in meditation at one end of the shed, at the other end of which was a carpenter shop, because they were doing all kinds of construction, temporary construction for the conference. And he would put people in meditation every morning while the construction was going on in the carpenter shop. And, you know, if you have in mind a different set of circumstances as ideal, this can be difficult to deal with. You know, it plays true just the same way for our karma, for things that come up. The help is there. You know, many of us have experienced this through illness and whatever, that the help is there and is giving us whatever it can give us, depending on the demands of our fate karma, you know. But the fact is that whatever happens to us, including the stuff we do to ourselves, you know, the mistakes we make, the failures we have, these are what the interruptions are built out of, is our failures, our mistakes, our lack of seeing, our blind spots. This is what we deal with. This is what we have to contend with, and we mess up. We mess up invariably. But Master is saying, you know, this is what we have to work with. That's why whatever comes to our account is in our best spiritual interest, because it's what we need. We can use it, and we can become very successful that way. But it's important to remember that, because it is so easy to think, no, it shouldn't be like this. Or in connection with our own failures, no, I shouldn't have done that. I've got to fix it. I've got to make it right. Well, we can try to make it right, but you know, but there's not possible always to do that. Things go on, things become complicated, people don't do what we want them to do, and we have to live with that. But it doesn't matter. Ultimately, our failures, our mistakes, our blind spots, our bad karma coming from the past, all of that is part of the deal. And the Master works with it. And the whole point of the path is to take whatever comes to us or whatever we make happen and then work with what we have. And we can do it. We can do it because Master gives us the power and the strength and the help to do it. It is his prerogative to help us. This is why in so many bhajan, Sanchi says, you are the forgiver. You know, we fail and fail and fail again, but the forgiveness lies in this. Through the very depth of our failure, we can grasp success. And it's there for all of us, each one of us, every person. The Master is offering that. It does not matter what has happened in the past. It does not matter. And then the Reverend Emil Christensen asked, when you say devotion of physical service, what actually are you referring to, outside or inside devotion of service? And this is transcribed. Doris did the transcription of this also, Doris Jokelson. What I heard when I was there, Emil was saying, and on the tapes, listening to the tapes afterward, Emil was saying devotional service. I don't think it makes any difference. The sense of the question is the same. But there's an interchange between him and the Master. This is something the inner Master had said to Emil. And Master finally says, I'm talking about the religion which is above all religions. Devotion may be in the practices in the outer religions, you see. Regularity, but with a heart full of love, that pays. When you said to me I should give more devotion of service, I was wondering just what do you mean by that, Emil asked. The Master said, do you know what devotion means? There's a difference between love and devotion. You are devoted to something when you take him to be a superior power, when you obey out of love, taking it to be the ideal, with no question of compensation or consideration. Just as you breathe, just as you breathe, going on with it, with no care as to whether it results in good or bad, that's called devotion. Then the Radhaswami gentleman who had begun the conversation asked, wouldn't the highest service to the Master be the devotion of body, mind, and soul altogether, as in Paramarth or in meditation, and with body, mind, and spirit? And the master replied, "Well, this is what is meant, you see, wholly and solely. Masters say, give your physical body to the master, give every possession you have to the master, give your mind and soul to the master. Do you see? Guru Amar Das says, I've given everything to the master, my physical body, my mind, my soul, my possessions. This is what Christ said. Leave all and follow me. All includes everything, you see. What more is wanted to be done? If you give everything, well, you're free." And Mr. Khanna said, "Okay, now the time is over. Have your breakfast." The master said, "All right, thank you." And we had breakfast. During that day, a number of people noticed my state-of-the-art Roberts tape recorder purchased earlier that year, which I had set up in the room where Master spoke, and asked me if I could make copies of the talk Master had given the day before at the Friends Meeting House, and I said that I could if they supplied the tapes. So all that day and for the rest of the stay, my principal occupation was making tapes of that talk and many others. Doris Yokelson kindly donated the use of her tape recorder also, and utilizing both of them, I made tape after tape after tape, first of one talk, then another, and so on. It was blessed work, and I was grateful to have it. That night, the master spoke to us again in Mr. Khanna's living room, which was actually two rooms which opened into each other via a large sliding door between them. Chairs were set up, and young people, including Judith and me, sat on the floor in two rows at the front. Altogether, about 100 people were accommodated, and the two rooms were packed every night and morning. On this Monday night, Taiji sang with much poignancy a poem written by the master to his master, Baba Sawan Singh Ji. The poem tells of the anguish he feels in his heart on being separated from him. Then the master said, "The hymn just now read out is a prayer from the disciple to his master. He says, 'It is you who have lacerated my mind, my heart. There is no remedy other than your own self. The remedy for the wound in this heart lies only in your hands. No other doctor can heal it. You are going away, but don't forget us.' That is a prayer. Well, Master does not forget, that's right. But still, out of the anguished heart comes the words of the disciple. 'For God's sake, don't forget us. We cannot forget you. But you also must not forget us. We are, after all, your own. If you forget us, who will heal the pain in our hearts? What will be our own remedy? What remedy can there be for the heart which is aching to have a glimpse of the Master? Nothing else, no words, no consolation will help.' In the time of Lord Krishna, there were many gopis who were very much in love with him. The gopis were the milkmaids that were on the farm where Lord Krishna had been brought up. And once his public life began, he had to leave them behind and go off and do other things. But they, however, were still in love with him. Once it happened that he remained away from them for some time, say about 6 or 8 months, and they could not reach him. They were crying disconsolately. Separation is a very bad thing. Two times are very difficult for a man who has developed love in his heart for someone. One, the time which has just passed in awaiting him, and the other, when he leaves him. Both are hard times. So Lord Krishna sent Uddho as a messenger to go and console them. Console them. Look here, God is everywhere. Master is everywhere. He is in your heart of hearts. He is the very controlling power of your own self in the body. Why are you worrying? He is the soul of your soul." Uddho went to them and spoke to them the best he could. With all that, they listened to it very calmly and finally told him, Oh, Udo, what you say is all right, but tell us, what remedy do you have with you for the eyes that are yearning to see the form of the Master? This is a prayer from the disciple to the Master. Don't forget us. And usually you'll find, as a matter of fact, that the Master himself never forgets. But the disciple cries, I have only one heart, and that you have now taken possession of. What am I to do? I can think of no one other than you yourself. There cannot be 10 or 20 hearts. You cannot devote one heart here, another there, and then another there. It is only one heart. Well, it is the throne of God. Don't let anybody sit on it except God. What do? We let every worldly thing sit there and we dethrone God. Guru Arjan said, the Master loves and remembers his disciples with every breath. Can a mother forget her small children? She might be working here, there, or anywhere. She might be in the kitchen and the child might be lying in his room, but there's a connection. If the child moves, then her milk begins to come from her breast. If the little child cries, she at once runs to him and leaves everything behind, even the most valuable thing. Similarly, we are all children of God, of the God in man. He does not forget us, but because of the yearning of the heart, his disciple does pray like that. Don't forget us. Even if you go away, we are still yours after all. But I tell you, it is the mother who first loves us, the child. The child's love is only reciprocal. The love that a master has for his children, for his disciples, comes from the level of the God in him. He loves his disciples as hundreds of mothers won't love their children. But he loves the soul, the development of the soul, with no consideration, no recompense, nothing of the sort. A mother may love her children with the hope that when they grow up they will help her and care for her in her old days. But the Master does not do that. He simply sees that they are all souls. The God in him thinks, he is my child. The more we have yearning like that, the more our mind is cleansed of all the dross of the world. It is washed away with the tears that roll down from the eyes. That's the water. With that water alone can the dross of the filth of many past births be washed away. There are two ways to go to Mecca from India. One is on the sea, the other over land. The way on the land is very sandy. There's a dearth of water. There are no communications through the deserts of Arabia. So it's very hard to reach the place of pilgrimage if you go on foot or even on horses, and no car can cross the sands. But there is a way across the sea that takes you there in 3 days. So somewhere Maulana Rumi said, if you want to make a pilgrimage to God, go through the waters of tears. You'll go quicker than you can on the land or through the sands. What is meant by that? Any prayers that are said, any rites or rituals that are performed, or any scriptures that are read mechanically with dry hearts like a gymnastic, won't help you to reach God. Your heart should be full, and that heart should overflow through the eyes. Once there was a pundit who was relating the story of Rama, reading it out of the scriptures in Sanskrit. An illiterate man was sitting, listening to him and shedding tears like anything. The pundit thought, perhaps he has followed me very well. When the talk was over, the pundit called him and said, you understood my sermon very well. The man said, I did not follow a word of what you were saying. Then why were you crying and weeping? I had the scene of Lord Rama before me. My heart was full and I was shedding tears all the time watching that scene. I never heard a word of what you said. So this sort of love is the foreshadow of coming things. When rain is coming, there are first clouds. When there are blossoms in the fruit-growing trees, there is hope for fruit. Similarly, the heart, which is full of anguish, which is yearning, which is overflowing with tears from the eyes, can reach God the quickest. And sometimes we never remember God. Days and days pass by, and we never think of him. Perhaps we have not seen all the aspects of keeping the spiritual diary. There is one very important thing about it, that during the day you are remembering the God in man. Otherwise you won't remember him. At least at night you will think back, what have I been doing? I have to send in the diary. Is it not a great blessing? We never realize the truth of the things that are given us. All the time you say to yourself, oh my Lord, I have not to do this, not to do that. So you are always thinking of the Master or the God in him. Such a heart becomes the fittest to receive him a quicker way. So that was a prayer, so very full of pathos, of yearning. Oh, Master, you are going away, but don't forget us. We cannot remember you unless you remember us. Our love is reciprocal, as I told you. So when two men, two disciples of the Master, sit together, naturally the remembrance of the Master comes. Is it not so? This is the first reason why you are asked not to miss attending the group meetings. When you sit together, you think of the Master. And someone might say of his own accord, this is like this, the other is like that, and that way the remembrance is revived. Another thing is what Christ said, when more than one man sits in my name, I am there. And moreover, you will develop receptivity. When Master initiates anybody, he resides with him from that very time, and he never leaves him unless he takes him to the lap of the Father. That is what is called God power, or Guru power, or Christ power. So such an attitude, such time spent, makes us fit, and when it comes, just sit in sweet remembrance. You will have response when you are there. This is one of the poems I wrote when I was away from my Master. This state of mind cannot be expressed in words. It has not been given to words to express the feelings of the heart, the yearning of the heart. So such an attitude radiates in the atmosphere. It goes to cleanse away all foreign external thoughts for the time being. Just as when an eagle comes, all the sparrows fly away, so when the eagle of love comes anywhere, no thoughts arise there. So all masters say, the heart has been given to you as a sacred trust. Don't misappropriate it. It is meant for God. Let only God and no other thing sit on that throne. Such like prayers help you. These things gush out afresh from the heart. Only such like prayers help. Sometimes we have models, specimens of prayers given by past masters. But those are only the words they gave out. The words should come out, should gush out from our very hearts. Only a mechanical repetition of something cannot have an effect. If you love him, you abide in his heart. Let my words abide in you, and you abide in me. How can you abide in him? When you remember him. The more you remember him, the more he reacts, do you see? And what does it cost? Anything? And time flies away like anything. At the time of separation from my Master, one time it was for 8 months, these things came out of my heart. The heart is only one. not two or three. How many have you got? One? Well, he wants your heart. When you give your heart, what remains? When the heart goes, everything goes, both the body and the soul. This is what is meant by surrender and devotion. Simply following in an intellectual way or by philosophical ways of thinking won't help you. Hafiz said, if the learned men come to know just an iota of the madness we have got yearning for the Lord, they will forget everything and they will dance like anything. Do you see? Such a heart is the abode of the Lord. Even when we say prayers, we are thinking of the worldly children and this and that thing. Tulsi Das says, just clean your mind so that God, your beloved, may manifest himself there. Then he defines what is the cleansing of the heart. He says, the heart in which no other thought other than that of God comes up is the pure heart. A heart in which there is love for God, yearning for God, is a fitting thing in which God manifests. That is why it is said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Purity means that. And that ended that day.
ਹੁਣ ਆਪ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਆ ਸਤਿਗੁਰੂ ਸਭ ਦਾ ਭਲਾ ਲੋੜਦਾ ਹੈ, ਦੁਨੀਆ ਕਿਤਨਾ ਵੀ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦਾ ਬੁਰਾ ਚਿੱਤ ਬੁਲਾਵੇ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਉਹਦੇ ਵੱਲ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ, ਉਹਦਾ ਕਦੇ ਬੁਰਾ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੋਣ ਦਿੰਦਾਗਾ।
Now he said that Gurumukh always, the master always seeks the welfare of other people and God is in his favor. That is why no matter if people think ill of the master, but still nobody can harm the master.
ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਹੈ ਉਹ ਗੁਰਮੁਖ ਨੂੰ ਵੀ ਦੇਖਦਾ ਹੈ, ਮਨਮੁਖ ਨੂੰ ਵੀ ਦੇਖਦਾ ਹੈ। ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਤੋਂ ਕੁਛ ਗੁੱਝਾ ਨਹੀਂ, ਜੈਸਾ ਕਿਸੇ ਦਾ ਕਰਮ ਹੈ ਵੈਸਾ ਉਹ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਅੱਗੇ ਭੁਗਤਾਨ ਕਰਦਾ ਹੈ।
God sees the gurumukhs as well as he looks at the manmukhs also, and that is why nothing is hidden from God, and whatever karmas one has done, God makes them pay off those karmas.
ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਨੂੰ ਕੋਈ ਬੁੱਧੂ ਨਹੀਂ ਬਣਾ ਸਕਦਾ ਗਾ, ਮਤਾ ਇਹ ਦਿਲ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਖਿਆਲ ਹੋਵੇ ਕਿ ਅਸੀਂ ਜੋ ਕੁਛ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਕਿਸੇ ਦੇ ਉੱਤੇ ਤੂਮਤ ਲਾਉਂਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਜਾਂ ਕਿਸੇ ਦਾ ਬੁਰਾ ਚਿਤਮਦੇ ਹੈ, ਸਾਡੇ ਕਿਹਾ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਸ਼ਾਇਦ ਉਸਦਾ ਰਸਤਾ ਬੰਦ ਕਰ ਦੇਵੇਗਾ ਜਾਂ ਐਸਾ ਕਰੇਗਾ, ਨਹੀਂ। ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਦੇਖਦਾ ਹੈ, ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਦੀ ਕਿਸੇ ਨਾਲ ਦੁਸ਼ਮਣੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਗੀ, ਗੁਰੂ ਦੀ ਕਿਸੇ ਨਾਲ ਨਹੀਂ। ਇਸ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਜੈਸਾ ਕੋਈ ਕਰਮ ਕਰਦਾ ਹੈ ਵੈਸਾ ਉਸਨੂੰ ਫਲ ਜ਼ਰੂਰ ਮਿਲਦਾ ਹੈ। ਜੈਸੀ ਭਾਵਨਾ ਕਰਕੇ ਕੋਈ ਗੁਰੂ ਨੂੰ ਦੇਖਦਾ ਹੈ, ਸੇਵਦਾ ਹੈ, ਵੈਸਾ ਉਸਨੂੰ ਫਲ ਜ਼ਰੂਰ ਮਿਲਦਾ ਹੈ।
ਨੋ ਵਨ ਕੈਨ ਫੂਲ ਗੋਡ ਇਫ ਸਮਵਨ ਸੇਜ਼ ਦੈਟ ਆਫਟਰ ਡੂਇੰਗ ਦ ਮਿਸਟੇਕਸ if we throw that on some other person and if we taunt other people or if we blame other people, it doesn't mean that by doing that God will accept what we are saying for that person and God will stop his way or God will stop his progress, because God sees everything. He doesn't have any enemies and he always gives us what we are supposed to have. Masters don't have any enemies and God also doesn't have any enemy, and they always give us what we are supposed to have.
ਮਹਾਤਮਾ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਸਮਝਾਉਂਦੇ ਆ, ਦੋਖ ਪਰਾਇਆ ਦੇਖ ਕੇ ਚਲਤ ਹੰਸਤ ਹੰਸਤ, ਆਪਦਾ ਕਦੂ ਕੱਬੂ ਨਾ ਦੇਖਿਆ ਜਿਸ ਕਾ ਆਦਿ ਨਾ ਅੰਤ।
ਮਹਾਤਮਾ ਟੈਲ ਅਸ ਦੈਟ ਲੁਕਿੰਗ ਐਟ ਅਦਰ ਪੀਪਲਸ ਫਾਲਟ ਵੀ ਆਰ ਬਿਕਮਿੰਗ ਹੈਪੀ ਐਂਡ ਵੀ ਆਰ ਲਾਫਿੰਗ, ਬਟ ਵੀ ਨੈਵਰ ਲੁੱਕ ਐਟ ਅਵਰ ਓਨ ਫਾਲਟਸ ਵਿਚ ਡੂ ਨਾਟ ਹੈਵ ਐਨੀ ਬਿਗਿਨਿੰਗ ਐਂਡ ਵਿਚ ਡੂ ਨਾਟ ਹੈਵ ਐਨੀ ਐਂਡ।
ਜਿਸ ਨੂੰ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਵੱਡਾ ਕਰੇ ਸੋਈ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਪਾਵੈਨ ਤਿਸ ਬਖਸ਼ ਲਏ, ਸੋ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਮਨ ਪਾਣੀ।
ਹੁਣ ਗੁਰੂ ਰਾਮਦਾਸ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਆ, ਜਿਹਨੂੰ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਵੱਡਾ ਕਰਦਾ ਹੈ ਉਹੀ ਵੱਡਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ, ਜਿਸ ਨੂੰ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਬਖਸ਼ੇ ਉਹੀ ਬਖਸ਼ਿਆ ਜਾ ਸਕਦਾ ਹੈ, ਉਹੀ ਦੁਨੀਆਂ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਪੂਜਿਆ ਜਾ ਸਕਦਾ ਹੈ।
ਨਾ ਗੁਰੂ ਰਾਮਦਾਸ ਜੀ ਸੇਡ ਦੈਟ ਓਨਲੀ ਹੀ ਬਿਕਮਸ ਗ੍ਰੇਟ ਹੂ ਇਜ਼ ਮੇਡ ਗ੍ਰੇਟ ਬਾਈ ਗੋਡ, ਐਂਡ ਓਨਲੀ ਹੀ ਇਜ਼ ਫੋਰਗਿਵਨ whom God himself forgives. And if God makes anyone great, if God makes anyone worth worshipping, only he is worshipped.
Je ko sadi kare o mudenge jaani.
Hun kehnde hai jinne parmatma nu aap de andar pragat kar liya hai, je koi ohdi rees kare ke is di ਤਾਂ ਪੂਜਾ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਹੈ, ਇਸ ਨੂੰ ਲੋਕ ਮੰਨਦੇ ਆ, ਮੈਨੂੰ ਕਿਉਂ ਨਹੀਂ ਮੰਨਦੇ? ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਉਹ ਭੁੱਲਿਆ ਹੋਇਆ ਹੈ, ਉਹ ਮੂੜ ਹੈ, ਅਗਿਆਨੀ ਹੈ।
Now he says that if anyone imitates the one within whom God is manifested, and if anyone says that why people worship him and not me, and why people follow him and not me, such a person is ignorant and he doesn't have any knowledge and is misled.
नानक सच्चा सच है बुझ सच समानी
हुण जिहदे उत्ते गुरु दया करे ओही मिल सकदा है गुरु दे उत्ते किसे दा जोर नहीं कोई हुक्म नहीं भी असीं हुक्म दे नाल उस तों इह चीज प्राप्त कर लांगे
नाउ ओनली ही ऑन हुम गॉड इज ग्रेशियस कैन मीट द मास्टर एंड No one has any control over the master, and no one can order the master. It is not like this that if you order the master, he will give you the things. We can get things from the master only if he wants us to have them.
Are Sat Niranjan Amar Hai Nirbho Nirvair Nirankar Jin Japya ਇੱਕ ਮਨ ਇੱਕ ਚਿਤ ਤਿੰਨ ਲਤਾਂ ਪਾਰ
ਹੁਣ ਗੁਰੂ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਆ ਗੁਰੂ ਰਾਮਦਾਸ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਕਿ ਉਹ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਸੱਤ ਹੈ ਉਹ ਮਾਇਆ ਤੋਂ ਰਹਿਤ ਹੈ ਆਪ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਜਿਨ੍ਹਾਂ ਨੇ ਉਸ ਨੂੰ ਜਪਿਆ ਉਹਦੀ ਭਗਤੀ ਕੀਤੀ ਉਹਦੇ ਘਰ ਪਹੁੰਚ ਗਏ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਸਿਰ ਦੇ ਉੱਤੋਂ ਜਿਹੜਾ ਹੋਮੈ ਦਾ ਭਾਰ ਸੀ ਉਹ ਲੱਥ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਹੀ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਰਹਿ ਜਾਂਦਾ ਹੈ
ਨਾਓ ਗੁਰੂ ਰਾਮਦਾਸ ਜੀ ਸੇਜ਼ ਦੈਟ ਦੋਜ਼ ਹੂ ਡੂ ਦ ਡਿਵੋਸ਼ਨ ਆਫ ਲਾਰਡ ਐਂਡ ਦੋਜ਼ ਹੂ ਕਮ ਇਨ ਦ ਸਿਲੈਕਸ਼ਨ ਆਫ ਗੋਡ ਐਂਡ ਦੋਜ਼ ਹੂ ਡੂ ਦ ਡਿਵੋਸ਼ਨ ਆਫ ਗੋਡ ਫਰੋਮ ਦੈਰ ਹੈਡ ਦ ਬਰਡਨ ਔਰ ਦ ਵੇਲ ਆਫ ਦ ਈਗੋਇਜ਼ਮ ਇਜ਼ ਲਿਫਟਡ ਅਪ ਐਂਡ ਦੇ ਓਨਲੀ ਹੈਵ ਗੋਡ ਐਂਡ ਮਾਸਟਰ ਵਿਦ ਇਨ ਦੈਮ
ਸੰਤ ਮਹਾਤਮਾ ਉਸ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਦੇ ਸ਼ਰੀਕ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੁੰਦੇ ਗੇ ਔਰ ਉਹ ਪਰਮਾਤਮਾ ਦੇ ਪਿਆਰੇ ਬੱਚੇ ਹੁੰਦੇ ਹੈ ਪਿਆਰਾ ਬੱਚਾ ਜੋ ਚਾਹੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਪਿਤਾ ਤੋਂ ਕਰਾ ਸਕਦਾ ਹੈ
ਸੇਂਟਸ ਐਂਡ ਮਹਾਤਮਾਸ ਆਰ ਨਾਟ ਇਕੁਅਲ ਟੂ ਗੋਡ ਦੇ ਆਰ ਦ ਡੀਅਰ ਚਿਲਡਰਨ ਆਫ ਗੋਡ ਐਂਡ ਇਫ ਦ ਲਵਿੰਗ ਡੀਅਰ ਚਿਲਡਰਨ ਵਾਂਟ ਦੇਅਰ ਫਾਦਰ ਟੂ ਡੂ ਐਨੀਥਿੰਗ ਦੇ ਕੈਨ ਮੇਕ ਦੇਅਰ ਫਾਦਰ ਡੂ ਐਨੀਥਿੰਗ ਦੇ ਵਾਂਟ
ਜਿਨੇ ਗੁਰਮੁਖ ਹਰੇ ਆਰਾਧਿਆ ਤਿਨੇ ਸੰਤ ਜਨ ਜੈਕਾਰ ਕੋਈ ਨਿੰਦਾ ਕਰੇ ਪੂਰੇ ਸਤਿਗੁਰੂ ਕੀ ਜਿਸਨੂੰ ਫਿਟ ਫਿਟ ਕਹੇ ਸਭ ਸੰਸਾਰ
ਹੁਣ ਗੁਰੂ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਆ ਕਿ ਆਪ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਆ ਕਿ ਜਿਨ੍ਹਾਂ ਨੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਸਤਿਗੁਰਾਂ ਦੇ ਕਹਿਣ ਦੇ ਮੁਤਾਬਕ ਆਪਣਾ ਜੀਵਨ ਢਾਲਿਆ ਕਮਾਈ ਕੀਤੀ ਅਸੀਂ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਨਿਮਸਕਾਰ ਕਰਦੇ ਹਾਂ
Now he said that I bow down to those who mold their lives according to the teachings of master
ਤਾਂ ਗੁਰੂ ਰਾਮਦਾਸ ਜੀ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਆ ਜੋ ਕੋਈ ਜਿਹਨੇ ਆਪਦੇ ਗੁਰੂ ਦੇ ਹੁਕਮਾਂ ਦੀ ਪਾਲਣਾ ਕੀਤੀ ਹੈ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਅਗਰ ਕੋਈ ਉਸ ਮਹਾਤਮਾ ਦੀ ਨਿੰਦਿਆ ਕਰਦਾ ਹੈ ਤਾਂ ਉਹਨੂੰ ਕੋਈ ਸੁਣਨ ਵਾਲਾ ਸ਼ਾਬਾਸ਼ ਨਹੀਂ ਦਿੰਦਾ ਉਹਨੂੰ ਫਿੱਟੇ ਮੂੰਹ ਪਏ ਕਰਦੇ ਹੈ
And then Guru Ramdas ji says that if anyone criticizes the perfect master who has molded his life according to the teachings of his master, if anyone is criticizing such a master, he doesn't get praised by the people and everyone curses him.
Our closing bhajan is on page 261. Hamare Pyare Satguru Jaisa. We have not seen anyone like our beloved Satguru. My Satguru is great. We haven't seen anyone as great as him. He is owner of both the worlds. He is the one who dwells in the hearts of the world. He is the knower of all the hearts. He is the one who knows the matters of all the hearts. His form is the form of Shabad. Such a form we have seen with our eyes. He alone who is capable of seeing him sees him, and when he sees him, keeps seeing him, becomes wonderstruck. His form is loving, his face is loving, and the beholder becomes his after seeing him. He is the attractive one, the one who is liked by the mind. Such a beloved we have all seen. Probably every eye saw him, but of course through his own angle of vision. But he who saw him lovingly came out of this midstream. He is a great ferryman. We have seen him taking a fully loaded ship. Dear one, Guru Kripal is that ferryman. He is the beloved of beloved Sawan. Dear one, Kripal is the ocean of grace. Ajay loves him more than his life. He is the most beautiful one. He who saw him became his. We have not seen anyone like our beloved Satguru. My Satguru is great. We haven't seen anyone as great as him. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 261.
Hamare pyare Satguru jaisa हमने ना कोई और देखा हमारे प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और देखा वे तो महान है मेरे सतगुरु वे तो महान Satguru, usa mahana na aur dekha, hamare pyare Satguru jaisa, humne na koi aur dekha, hamare pyare Satguru jaisa. हमने ना कोई और देखा वे देखो दोनों जहान के मालिका दुनिया के दिल में बसने वाले हर घाट के ज्ञात है विज्ञानी दिलों की बात न जानने वाले वे हैं दोनों जहान के मालिका दुनिया के दिल में बसने वाले हर घट के ज्ञात है विज्ञानी दिलों की बात न जानने वाले शब्द स्वरूप है रूप उनका शब्द स्वरूप है रूप उनका रूप जो हमने आंखों से देखा हमारे प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और हमारे प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और देखा देखे तो देखने वाला देखे देखे तो देखता ही रजाए प्यारे मूरत प्यारी सूरत देखने वाला उनका हो जाए देखे तो देखने वाला देखे देखे तो देखता ही रचाए प्यारी मूरत प्यारी सूरत देखने वाला उनका हो जाए मन मोहक मन को बने वाला मन मोहक मन को बने वाला
मन भवान हम सब ने देखा
हमार प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और देखा हमारे प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और देखा
देखा तो शायद हर नजर ने देखा अपने अपने ख्याल से जिसने भी उनको प्यार से देखा निकला वो इस मझदार से देखा तो शायद हर नजर ने देखा अपने अपने ख्याल से जिसने भी उनको प्यार से देखा निकला वो इस समझदार से वे तो हैं एक महान नाविका वे तो हैं एक महान नाविका बार कर नावल जाते देखा हमारे प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और देखा हमारे प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और देखा वे नाविक गुरु कृपाल प्यारे सवन प्यारे का प्यारा कृपा का सागर कृपाल प्यारे अजायब को जान से है पी प्यारा वे नाविक गुरु कृपाल प्यारे सवन प्यारे का प्यारा कृपा का सागर कृपाल प्यारे अजायब को जान से भी प्यारा वे तो अति सुंदर सलोने वे तो अति सुंदर सलोने उनका हुआ जिसने देखा हमारे प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और देखा हमारे प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और देखा वे तो महान है मेरे सतगुरु वे तो महान है मेरे सतगुरु उषा महान ना और देखा हमारे प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और देखा हमारे प्यारे सतगुरु जैसा हमने ना कोई और देखा
We have not seen anyone like our beloved Satguru. My Satguru is great. We haven't seen anyone as great as him. May God bless us all.